Roll up, ladies and gentlemen, to the greatest podcast of nerds. Step right up and experience the magnificence that is the Two Ring Circus Podcast. You'll laugh. And you'll be amazed at what comes next. Don't worry about the smell. It's just the stars of our show, Tom Italiano and Matt Bradshaw.
Should we do that again?
No. I think it's perfect.
I wasn't ready. So... Do you know when you're out in public, like in a supermarket or something like that, do you hear your name? I hear my name all the time because everyone's name is Mum. I just think they're saying Dom. So I'm like this, looking around all the time. Not that I think my name's Mum, but it just... Because there's that first bit of the word that you don't really hear, but you hear that, I could be all over the place. I'm just covering up
my... Okay? What's happening? Have you got an erection?
No. I'm just conscious that because you said you lost 2 kilos, I think I've put it on. Do you know how the balance of the universe has been shifted to... So not that I'm assuming that if you lost it, then I got it. But
you have assumed that in the past about our relationship as well. Did you talk about it on the podcast or just try to... Actually, I don't think it was. I think it was just in a conversation we had where I was lamenting the fact that I'd done no work.
And I'd done your share of the work.
Not for the week. I think it was for the year.
I have that phrase. People say, oh, it's one of those days. And I just said, yeah, I'm having one of those lives. And I'm not even
like
joking.
No, I don't like it when you say that.
Yeah, but I don't...
Squeamish and whimsical.
Oh. I don't think I can spell either of those words.
Squeamish.
Yeah.
We can spell persnickety, though.
I can. I wouldn't ever say it. So, welcome to episode...
10.
10. This is 10.
Yeah, we're double figures.
Welcome to episode 10.
Wait, stop. Wait, you don't have to stop talking. I'm just shifting my mic because I realise that my chin is rubbing on it.
This is a very, very special episode, not because it's the 10th, but it's because Matt has survived through a week of... flu bronchitis to be able to record it.
Flunkitis, you say?
Did I say flunkitis?
No, but I don't think flu bronchitis is a thing, so...
Flunkitis, yeah, it's definitely out there.
There was a lot of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was as sick as I can remember being for quite some time, so it's not like me to lie about in bed for days on end, but I did that and dropped 2 kilos.
Which I got.
8 gigs.
Oh, that's... 250 grams a gig, which is probably about how much weight you would have put on from beer.
That's good. So, brackets, how dare you?
I was just hypothesizing.
Yeah, so I'm back. Today was my first day back, given that we're recording this on a Monday.
Mm.
This is my first day back in the office.
Oh, you've been doing stuff?
So much stuff.
I only did like a little bit of plumbing today. What I meant by that is helping my dad out on the farm, replumbing the house.
Okay.
Yes.
That's good.
It wasn't a metaphor.
No. What's a metaphor?
That's one less than a metaphor.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a tool you used to bend those plastic pipes.
No, the plastic pipes just bend.
Yeah.
Yeah, the plastic. I don't know what the thing is for the copper pipes, because we had to do some copper piping. I think it's just a pipe bender.
They're awesome, those things.
Unbelievably cool.
The bit of round thing and you do the...
Yeah, with it's got like a compass kind of thing on it so you can get the...
No, that's a theodolite.
What?
A theodolite.
What's a theodolite?
That's not what that is. A theodolite's the thing they use in surveying. That's when you see the dude with the tripod and the thing and the other guy with the pole down the road.
That's called a theodolite.
Yeah.
Far out. That's another word I don't think I can spell.
It's spelled the way it looks.
Is it phonetically? Spelt the way it looks. What, like a tripod thing with it? So now we know what you've been doing this week.
Oh, yeah.
Lying in bed, not doing much.
Hey!
Recovering. By the way, right now, if you're listening to this in a podcast, I'm semi-dancing, which is how I'd actually dance. Yeah, I semi-dance.
I feel like that's something else as well. Go on. What's been going on with you?
Oh, lots.
Go on.
I've been doing all the work that you haven't been doing. Not on your business. No, like, because you haven't had anyone to do that because you've been sick. I'm doing my own stuff.
Tell me about your business.
My Dom. Business.
Business well, with a Z, I would imagine, given your current state of affairs.
Possible. Yeah. Is that what you... It's a good one.
Thanks, dude.
You're good at that.
Yeah.
I have, I guess, launched. Yeah. It's funny when it's an internet thing and it doesn't really exist. So you can't... For me, launching something is like a boat. it's not launch, press button.
Well, you've got plenty of bottles of port that you can smash over stuff if you need to.
You should see how many bottles of port are under my carport right now.
Carport?
Yes, there are 86 bottles of port. 86 bottles of port. which on Thursday, I'm going to my uncle's laboratory to alcohol test for its alcohol content.
Awesome.
Which we think is about 18.5%.
True.
Yes.
Wow. You didn't post that second picture that you took of me.
Oh, the one where you were pretending to be passed out lying on the ground with port spilled all over the place.
Pretending.
Yeah, I thought given that we were just launching it, that we didn't want to kind of give the impression that this is definitely what's going to happen to you if you drink some of this port.
Dude, everything is a serving suggestion. You don't have to drink it all in one go and fall over.
It's like pretending. There's no such thing as a responsible service of alcohol. Or consumption.
86 bottles of port, you say?
Yeah. So we have to test it, because when you do a label, you have to have the alcohol content on the label.
Oh.
In order to give it to someone.
Oh.
So it has to be tested.
Trueness.
Yep.
I didn't know that. Mine doesn't.
No, yours was a prototype. And then once I looked into it, I went, oh, well, that was a gift. It doesn't matter.
Actually, producer.
Yeah. Oh, hang on. We have to make sure his arm gets in it. So, keep going. Got long arms.
Here is said example of said bottle of port. This is bottle number 87.
So you can see, you might not be able to see in the video, certainly won't be able to see on an audio podcast, but you can see the bottle, it's got some residue on the actual inside of the bottle. So we're going to take the port out, we're going to wash the bottle out, and we're going to filter the port. Because it's probably about 16, 17 years old, it's going to have bits in it, residue bits. So we're going to filter.
Put this down now, I feel like Del Ventolini.
So we're going to filter that out and then rebottle it, each one. So I think there have been about 28 or 29 port pledges.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are we assuming for the purposes of this podcast that anyone who's listening to it already knows about your possible case?
No, but well done for introducing it before, and then silly me for not actually telling anyone what it's about.
That's why I'm here, dude.
So, and by the way, excellent job continuing to bring us back on track. And I'm going to post a photograph that I've made, which is, it's a picture of a single train track. And I've written on it, Matt's conversation during our podcast. And then this underneath is like all the, like a junction, train junction with all the train tracks going in. And like Dom's conversation during podcast. I'm going to post that for it.
Well, I just know that in the early stages of what we were doing with this podcast, we were roundly criticised for not resolving.
Who criticised us?
A few people had some things
Which
to say.
Which people?
Some people had some things to say.
I think you should name so I can shame. How dare they criticise our artistic endeavour?
Well, criticise is probably a little bit harsh, but they certainly said there were I'll things the that they that. Wanted to be resolved.
No, that's completely reasonable. The reasonable part of me suggests it's reasonable. The unreasonable part of me says, fuck you guys.
Dom's got a possible campaign.
I've decided I have to swear in every podcast to justify the E. At least once I have to say a swear. Hey, Scritch. Matt's cat may appear in the podcast. May not. She's in the room.
Matt's cat may appear larger than she really is.
Is this a rearview mirror podcast? Yeah. So a possible campaign is a crowdfunding campaign, and crowdfunding has been mentioned before in our podcast, is where I bought the back shaver too.
See episode
2 or 3?
3, I think.
Something like that. So I have a new EP. An EP is an extended play, which means it's more songs than a single, less songs than an album. And I'm going to be releasing that. But what I did is I'd already paid for the recording and the mastering. And then I was like, I still need to come up with quite a few $1,000s to get it out into the world. And so I thought, I'll give this a go. And if people back it, great. If not, well, I'll just have to wait longer.
So when you consider that a major Hollywood motion picture, that the budget allocated to the making of the film, almost that again is for marketing.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing that you need to consider when you're trying to do stuff.
Absolutely.
And get it out there.
Yes. So the campaign is a 31-day campaign, and I had a $6,000 target. And thanks to a whole bunch of remarkably generous and freaking awesome people, it hit the target in 9 days. On the 9th day of the possible... I can't do a song off the top of my head.
That won't be on the EP.
Well, you know, everything... It's got to go through draft revisions before it gets fully recorded, of course. And so, yeah, we were about halfway through now, and I think it's almost at $7,000. So you can do things like get a bottle of port with your name labelled on it.
When he says you, he means
you. You, as in you who are listening. So this will actually come out in a couple of days' time, so there will still be 10 days left for those people listening who possibly most of them will have already contributed, because that's what our listener group is the same people that...
Yeah, but...
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? It's so cool. I can't believe it. You know when I can't believe something is when my voice gets really high. Oh, my God! Yeah. It's amazing. Do you know who... was the final pledge to tip it over the edge?
No.
I'll give you one guess. Actually, I'll give you as many guesses as you want.
I don't need any guesses. I'm not going to guess.
Do you know who?
No.
Ah.
Who?
Liz.
Oh, I would never have guessed.
My ex-girlfriend.
Trueness.
Just happened to log on from Peru while she's walking in the mountains somewhere and go, I better do it now because, you know, who knows when I'm going to have internet access. And she was the one that... Which is funny because... A friend of ours, Rosie, and my mum were having a bit of a standoff because they wanted to be the one to push it. And then she just swooped in.
They do that.
Yep.
She's like an eBay sniper.
She's an eBay sniper. But it was quite funny. I do laugh.
Alanis Morissette would almost have called that. So, so what else? How do people...
You ought to know.
How do people...
So, because you can go to www.possible.com and then type Dom Italiano and my little funny face will come up on the thing, or you can go to getyournameonthisCD.com, because I thought that would be easier for people to remember.
Yep.
And so I set that up and that just directs to the thing. And then you can have a look at stuff.
Good work.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about some of the things that are still left?
Everything's still left. Because I don't think I put a limit on any of them except the really expensive ones.
No, you didn't, but I was trying to build drama, you know. Ah. Tickets still.
You can still get things. Yeah. Well, yeah, you've still got a few days to get in there and get... The key factor is obviously you'll be able to buy the CD at a later date, but the other things won't be available after the campaign, so...
No. And the huge bonus with being a pledger at any point is you become part of... the building of the CD. You get your name on the CD.
Get your name on it. Now, that's a really interesting one, because I was adamant from the beginning about whoever contributes, I will put the... Unless they don't want their name in there. Whoever contributes, I'll put their name in there, like to say, thanks, you made this happen. Mm. And everyone who was kind of... had either done a campaign that I consulted with or even... who'd done one... or maybe had known people who do one, said that that was that was too easy. It was like, well, you know, that means I only have to buy a CD and pledge $20 and they get the name in it. I was like, well, yeah, that's the point. Because most of the campaigns, that's a real a kicker for like a $100 pledge. It's like, oh, that might turn a $50 pledge into a $100 one. And I just thought, no, just, you know, anything.
And for those sorts of campaigns, are they for people who then become somehow... No, because you've supported campaigns for other artists. What's the main one I'm thinking of? David... No, not David.
David Mead.
David Mead, thank
you.
Yeah,
I did the David Mead one.
Yeah. And you were like a... You got like a, not a production credit, but a...
Yeah, as a producer.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah, so I've decided everyone's going to be a musical conservationist.
That's it.
Yeah, because it is. I mean, like when you help someone fund something, it's like, okay, well, you know, this is like building a well in, you know, somewhere that doesn't have water, or well, it's clearly not as important as that.
I wasn't going to say anything.
But it's the equivalent of like, well, you know, you can...
Also, what's the point in building a well? It doesn't have any place, it doesn't have any water. It's never going to get filled, dude.
Don't you...
Yes.
I was just checking that I knew the purpose of building wells.
Well.
I found that really interesting, and I did a lot of research. I looked at a lot of campaigns that were successful or just scraped across the line, and I saw that there was a real focus mostly on the
music.
Excuse
me, sorry.
That's all right. You've been
There's something very kind of grandma-like about unfolding a folded-up tissue and blowing your nose on it. All I need now is a cardigan so I can slurt it up my sleeve. Which is disgusting.
Yeah.
It's the second most revolting thing this side of a handkerchief.
I'll have to find out what it is. There is a book, a woman who's an anthropologist who went and did some work with a village somewhere. And, you know, a village that hadn't had a lot of contact with Westerners. And so she stayed there for a few months. And the villagers noticed that she blew her nose into a hanky and then rolled it up and then put it in her pocket, right? And at the end of her time there, they presented her with a jar full of their boogers, right? Because they thought that what she was doing is... Because they would just do that, you know, the thing and just snot out onto the ground. And they thought that it was really special, something that, you know, the Western weird thing that Westerners do. They save them for later by wrapping them up and keeping them. So they, here you go, here's a jar of our snot. I'll have to find out. I'll come back. I'll do some research.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
I'll come back and tell you who that was, because it's quite fascinating.
It's good.
Yeah. Maybe that's all we need to know about it.
Possibly.
Do you keep your tissues or do you throw them away?
No, I keep them.
Good. Yeah. Just as an anthropological research note.
No, I'm building a house out of them.
Really?
Yeah, I'm recycling, dude.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's not how you build a house.
It's not.
No.
Good.
That's right. So possible campaign going bloody amazingly, and still 2 weeks left, and onwards and upwards, they say.
Well done, man.
Yeah.
What's the album called?
It's not about what you think it's about.
What is it about?
Well, that's what a little book I'm writing is about.
Are you writing a book?
Yeah, it's a little book that will accompany the CD. It's called What It's Not About What You Think Is About Is About. I'm serious.
Good.
Yeah.
That's the first I've heard of that.
Oh, yeah. It's only a little tiny thing. It just talks about like, each song and like a little bit of background of where things happened. Because the thing about it, which is interesting, what's happened this year with all these like little magnetic poem things I've done every day is I'll see someone and they'll say, oh, I saw that thing you wrote the other day. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And then they'll tell you what it is to them. And then you have to decide whether you break their heart and say, actually, that's not what I was writing about. But I found that almost exclusively someone else's interpretation of what I've written is absolutely not the same as what my intention was.
Wow.
So I thought, and that is very much the case usually with a song as well.
Hmm.
I've got one song on this that people will absolutely think is about my most recent ex-girlfriend, and it's not at all about that. Apart from the fact that, of course, you can't write and disregard your life experience, but
you can't.
In my head, that's not what I had in my mind when I was writing it. So yeah, it's been fun. It's been a great amount of work and being creative, and it's been awesome.
Does that lead us neatly into what we were going to get together and talk about today?
Could be.
I think so.
We had a suggestion, a topic suggestion. Yeah. So our friend Rebecca sent me a message saying, I just watched this really cool TED Talk on grit by Angela Duckworth, Angela Lee Duckworth. And I said, yes, I've seen it. And I read her book. And she said, oh, fuck, of course you've read the book.
Ding. That's Dom's swear for the episode.
But does that happen to you often too, where you go, I've never heard of something, and then suddenly it appears on your radar, and then you see it everywhere? Like,
yeah, that there.
Like when you buy a silver Subaru, you've never seen one before, and then suddenly they're everywhere?
Absolutely.
But it's just that you start noticing them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Confirmation bias.
That's what it's called.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is. So... I sent you the... it's not that I'm not concerned about your health. It's just that... it's just what you do now. You just cough all the time. So I just assume...
Yes, it's just what I do now.
Just assume you're going to be okay.
It's my thing.
Yeah.
It's my new thing.
Yeah.
I've been working on it.
And I won't have a go at you when you give it away.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
It's like a new haircut. You know, when someone gets a haircut and then they... You go, hey, there's a new haircut. I don't want to make a big deal out of it. Then they grow it out and they get a different haircut. And you don't say, I really miss your old haircut.
One of our mutual friends asked if I contracted this from you.
Ah. Fuck them. Well, I had it a month ago.
I'm not sure if that's what they were implying.
Well, this isn't one of those things that you can contract from that, I don't think. No, I had this a month ago. Surely the incubation period is shorter than a month.
Possibly.
Do we have anyone in the room that knows about incubation periods of the flu?
I think the producer could look it up if he needed to.
It's much less than a month.
Much less than a month, apparently.
There you go.
There we go. So whoever said we share germs as suchly can double fuck off. I'm in swear mood.
Yeah, you are. You're a swear bear.
I think it's because I'm excited about life.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, and when I get excited, I swear. And cover myself with this bear pillow. Have you know how many stuffed toys I had to die to make this pillow?
Look at my Naugahyde couch.
Uh-oh. There's some serious noise-age happening.
What have you done?
I don't know. All right, we're all good.
Okay, dude.
See, look. It's like my heartbeat was getting recorded on the screen. Okay. Did you watch the TED Talk?
I did. I've read bits of the book as well.
Oh, cool.
So I'm going to condense it into one paragraph. What do you think about that?
To prove that I own the book, I brought it. I can't actually prove that I've read it because you can't prove you've read it. But I do own it. These are the kind of books, you know, my dad and I swap books all the time. It's kind of the kind of book we swap about, you know, thinking and doing and stuff. Mainly because that way we don't have to... We like the same kind of books because they're not about story, they're not about narrative, they're about things. So you can't necessarily say, oh, I enjoyed the story or I didn't like that character. It's like it's all because it's fact-based. You just get to talk about the facts.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, so we
and yet you and your dad both write poetry.
Yeah. Oh, I've got to bring Wagtail Bob for you.
Okay.
I'll read Wagtail Bob on another episode.
Nice.
Wagtail Bob is a poem my dad wrote me when I was maybe 4 or 5 in response to asking him after we went for these country walks, Dad, why are there so many dead rabbits on the side of the road? And so he wrote me this poem, and it's glorious. Recently, since our conversation about our podcast about depression and whatnot, he started writing poetry about that. It's cool.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe you can publish his book as well.
Why not? See how we go.
Go on then.
So, we should talk about the book.
All right, dude.
I keep looking at the screen and then I'm wondering, you know, why it's not doing things.
It's okay.
Okay. Excellent. Do you want to explain what
opening gambit? About?
Yeah.
Yeah, right then.
Cool.
Essentially, Angela Lee Duckworth says that talent is not the prerequisite for success, that effort counts for more than just talent. So if you were to give a numerical weight to stuff, talent would be one and effort would be two.
Yep.
The talent times effort equals skill, and skill times effort equals achievement.
Love it.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's what I wrote.
Cool.
The sustained application of effort towards long-term goal is the biggest predictor of lifelong achievement. So the idea that you find something you want to do and apply yourself to it unceasingly is always going to be a bigger indicator of success than just raw talent.
Now, interestingly, what I don't relate to in this book is she does talk about talent a lot and she does believe in it, and I am far less of a believer in talent. So I brought another book.
That's why Dom works with me.
So I brought another book which backs up my feelings about talent a lot more than hers does. But I do... and I can say... one of the reasons I say this is mainly... not just because of my experience in my own life about the idea of, you know, whether talent exists or not, but also, like, you know, I went to a teacher's college and, you know, I sat in classrooms and looked at kids who... kids in year seven, 12-year-old kids that had never played music before, who had 13 weeks of, you know, tasting music to see whether they would pick it as an elective, right? And seeing teachers talk, suggesting that you had to have talent to be good at music. And, like, how does that... I mean, I didn't pick up the guitar till I was 12. So I was the same age as these little year seven kids. So I never had any more experience in music than they did. But I'd never had a teacher say, you have to have talent to be any good at it. So I didn't kind of have that in my mind that, oh, well, if I don't get a good mark on this test by the end of my 13 weeks of music in year seven, if I don't get a good mark, then that shows I don't have any talent. So I may as well not try with music.
Sure.
Right. Whereas I was seeing that, like, when I was on teaching rounds, and kids going, oh, I'm shit at music. Now, getting a bad score because the system teaches it poorly doesn't mean you won't be good at it one day, right? But to conclude at 12 years old, there's no point in trying because I've got no talent, has been a real issue for me.
Yeah, okay.
And I think just in general conversation when you just talk to people about...
That's the nature of testing rather than anything else, though, sure.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's also that we go back to how you use language. It's got nothing to do with talent, but that's the way people talk about it.
Okay.
And it's the way you hear someone talk about, you know, Australia's Got Talent. You don't suddenly, you know, wake up one morning or, you know, get born into a life where you can juggle a chainsaw. You know, that's... It's not always a talented juggler. No, it's someone who's juggled lots and lots and lots and lots and lots in their life and then decided, I'm going to try and juggle a chainsaw and some knives as well. Like, that doesn't make you talented. It just means you worked hard. Which is a lot more about what this book by Matthew Syed is about, which is called Bounce, which is about how champions are made, which it just literally talks about working incredibly hard, putting a lot of time and effort into repetitive, not just practice, but purposeful practice. So,
yeah.
But great, really interesting, because it's just that idea of, we could talk about our own experiences with where we are in our lives.
We could.
Should we?
Sure. Shawana?
Yeah. Did you write some notes about that?
I did, dude.
Good. You're so good at this. Not only can you keep us on track, but you write notes.
I thought I should.
Yeah, you're good.
Otherwise, all I would have had to say was, I definitely think I've got by more on grit and determination than I have on talent.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that I sit next to you and dare to play a guitar solo, I think, speaks to that.
Why did you say that? No, but I mean...
Because Dom is a virtuoso guitar player, and he and I share lead vocals one song after another when we do gigs. And generally, if Dom is singing the song, then I will play a guitar solo when there is a guitar solo in the song. And it often makes me giggle.
Right. See, I think you're a really good guitar player. I like listening to you play.
It also makes me giggle.
We're different players, clearly.
What?
But
who said? Who told?
We're different humans, believe it or not.
I can't play a scale. I actually don't know any scales. I do everything by ear.
Really?
And guessing how many frets I need
sense.
To move. To
that actually make, makes sense because you play really linearly up a string a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, and back down. Mm. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
I have to come back down, otherwise I run out of frets. But thanks for noticing.
Yeah. That explains. I didn't know you didn't know scales, but
yeah, you did.
No, but I just, it's that thing.
I can't read music.
Oh, I can hardly read music either. I mean, I can kind of go every good B. All right, that's I've got a music degree doing that.
Well, I produced music for a theatre show doing
yeah. But that's the scenario of you get good at what you practice. I didn't grow up playing a traditional instrument where you have to sight read. You know, kind of going, okay, well, there's a violin, so, and you're in violin lessons. So I had a couple of guitar lessons, got into year seven, within maybe 6 weeks, got slapped over the head in a guitar lesson and didn't go back to a guitar lesson again. The teacher thought I was being a smartass, and I didn't understand that capital A minor scale was the letter A, as in A, B, C, D, E, F, G, the key of A minor. I thought he'd written A minor scale, and I asked, which minor scale is it? And just the way he spoke, the way I heard it, was, it's A minor scale. Which one? He thought I was being a smartass, being belligerent about which one. I was just massively confused. That I didn't understand that it went A or B or C. I didn't get it. So he slapped me over the head and said, you keep fucking it up and whatnot. I never went back to a guitar lesson with him. I didn't have one again until an actual proper guitar lesson until I think year 11. By which time I could physically play, but I didn't know anything. And I'd missed that point where... So I got to that point where I could play well enough that if I went physically back to learning how to sight read, it was really frustrating because I could play much better than I could read. So you put the notes in front of me and I slowed down I slowed down to the point of being embarrassed and frustrated because it made me look like I couldn't play. And so I'm still like that. And so I've almost avoided situations like playing in a pit, like a theatre pit or something like that. Yeah, I can read tab. Yeah.
Like sight read tab?
But the thing with tab is generally are aware of the sound, like you've heard the thing before.
Right. So, tab is like dumbed down music written for guitarists because we're not very clever.
Well, it's actually the original way lute music was written.
Lute?
Yeah, or guitar music was written.
Oh, I thought you meant playing guitar for money.
Loop music. So I've never really had to sight read in a musical situation, so I'd have never got good at it.
But I had to sight read a gig for Guy Sebastian once.
But why didn't he do it?
Hey, Guy, B flat.
You can just do this yourself, you know.
But it's guitar, so it's easy. I didn't have to play notes, I just had to play chords.
Yeah, I can kind of... so I can
not,
play charts.
It's not really sight reading.
Yeah, but I can't... I find it really difficult to play notes. Yeah. Back on track? Oh, sorry, we sit next to each other and play. And now I know you don't know scales.
Hmm.
Yeah. And how's that? So we've been playing music together for this long, for 15 years, like multiple gigs a week most of the time, and I didn't know that you didn't know.
Really?
Yeah. That's how, that just proves that you get good at what you practice, and if you're, if, so you play well enough to make people think that you know how to play scales.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, right.
I remember doing this guitar solo, I was probably year 11, and I was playing in this band. And
we just
had
this,
no, this, we had this chord progression, and I played the solo over it. And these dudes who were a couple of years older, who I still know now, who are great musos, but they were in maybe first or second year at a music college in Geelong, and came over at the end of the gig. You know, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just playing guitar. They're like, "Oh man, I love that Elinian thing you were doing over." And I didn't understand what they were saying. And then I had to get Steve, this one particular guy, to explain. So what do you mean? Oh, when you did that, I said, "Oh, I was just playing like the B shape over the E chord." Like, and he said, "So you don't know that sound?" I said, "No, I'm just hitting that note because it sounds cool." And then it wasn't until I really kind of went to guitar lessons, year 12, with the guy that Steve was in a band with, that I went, ah, so if you do that with that, it's called that. Oh, but it still didn't learn to sight read.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I learnt violin when I was a kid.
Okay.
And then I quit violin to play. So I learnt violin in primary school, and then I quit violin to start playing piano. So I learnt piano for 4 years.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my piano teacher quit, and I...
What? Quit you? That's it, Bradshaw. You pushed me to the edge.
On a previous podcast, I said my family ran away from me. Yeah, same thing. Oh, wow. She went to Canada to live.
Oh.
So when she left, I stopped playing.
Oh.
So it's weird. So all through high school, I didn't do anything musical.
Yeah.
I was in uni when I decided that I would go on audition for a band, and I was terrible. I'd say
to sing,
play.
Yeah.
So my first band was a three piece playing all original stuff.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I mean, I've got recording somewhere, I'm sure, of us rehearsing. We probably did a few gigs, high school gigs and stuff.
Yeah.
As in at their high school, the two guys I was in a band with were in high school.
Cool.
John was really good. Still a good mate of mine. But I, outside of that, then I auditioned for a band, and I, being that I was naturally really shy, I didn't ever practice or anything, and I'd never sung covers, I don't think. So I went along to this audition and just, I was awful. And like sang an octave lower than the song was supposed to be, because it was totally out of my range, and I don't reckon I even knew that I was singing an octave lower. Or maybe I did, maybe I realised that something was wrong. But
yeah,
so then I,
but even that for you to kind of make that decision that, well, that's high, but I can, if I mimic it here, it doesn't, like, it sounds different but it doesn't sound bad.
Yeah,
like, that's,
I didn't get the gig.
Yeah.
But I guess I had it in my head then that that was what I was going to do, because I hadn't thought of anything else that I wanted to do, really. I mean, I'd given up on uni because I hated it, and I just set about the next sort of probably 4 years of just trying to get better at
stuff. Did you say that you used to go to, so you stopped going to uni, but you actually did go to uni?
And well, I went for 18 months. So my second year, I was driving to uni and sitting in my car, and electric guitar. I never owned an acoustic, sitting in my car and just playing electric guitar, and then driving back home again and telling my parents that everything was lovely.
Awesome.
I did 6 months of that.
No, I worked with a guy who did that for 3 years. His parents thought he was going to uni every day, and he wasn't. And his best mate told everyone at his 21st.
Oh, wow.
In his 21st speech. So not everyone knows this, but blah, blah, blah. He's been telling everyone he's been going to uni for the last 3 years, but he hasn't.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and the whole place is, what? His parents didn't know. That was a long time ago. I'm sure they're over it now. I never wanted to be a singer.
No?
No, I was a guitar player. I wanted to be Paul Gilbert, Nuno Bettencourt, Richie Sambora, which was a guy on the side who played with a great singer, sat next to someone and just like, yeah, look at this guy. How awesome is this?
Yeah, see, I wanted to be Paul Stanley.
Right.
So I wanted to be the singer who could play guitar well enough to get by.
Okay, yeah. I only fell into singing during first year of Box Hill. So I went and tried to do a classical guitar course. So I learnt a couple of classical pieces, auditioned, and they went, yeah, you're all right. You don't know any music theory, but we can probably teach you that, which they couldn't, as it turned out. When I got to the end of first year, the dean ordered me in for a meeting and asked me...
Stupid dean.
He said, we'd like to invite you not to come back. And I said,
wow.
I said, yes, I think... I think that's probably a wise choice. I had a very, very messy 19th year of my life. And most of which was because I was in a uni course with people who'd been playing classical guitar for a very long time who were very good. And I wasn't.
Mm.
You know, I was totally faking it. And as the time went on, like, it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
But I tried. But then the next year, I was at first year at Boxer, which is a contemporary music course. And I went for an audition. I went for a bunch of auditions and kept getting gigs over guitar players who were way better than me. And the only reason I was getting gigs is because the singer would say, do you sing? And I'd be like, well, I can do a harmony.
Mm.
And then they'd sing, you know, do you know any songs? And I'd sing something like Saw Her Standing There, you know, well enough to give the singer a break during the set.
Yeah.
And that meant I got the gig over guitar player and went, no, I don't sing. Because it became something like useful, you know, to the actual people who were hiring you for gigs. And so I worked out that, well, if I'm good enough to get gigs at my current level of playing, then I should probably work on the singing thing. So I switched after first year into vocal major.
Yeah, right.
Because I wasn't, like, I couldn't sing a whole gig. You know, I'd lose my voice in... I'd sing Saw Her Standing There, it'd be fucked until the next set. So that's what made me...
Yeah, it's funny, when little kids come along to, like, the afternoon gigs and stuff like that, and their parents come over and see, you know, little Jimmy's playing guitar, and I always encourage them to learn to sing as well, because it's just such a... Aside from anything else, I think it informs better guitar players as well. I think you just have a different appreciation for how to structure a melody when you've got a vocal that goes along with your fingers.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if I don't know how well I implement that strategy, but I certainly think it.
I don't mean melodies that you can sing. That's not what I'm talking about. But I mean, you listen, the guitarists that I really like guys like Steve Vai.
Yeah, like sing through the guitar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, he can sing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to relate this back to...
We're telling our grit stories, aren't we?
Sorry?
We're telling our grit stories about sticking at it. And
yeah, like, yeah.
Which is funny, the one thing that Miss Duckworth talks about, certainly when she does her TED Talks as well, is how she was a jumper from one thing to another for a long time, and how that... is at odds against someone who does succeed. Like, there's a bit of a 10-year rule. It's like, if you stick at something for long enough. So there's the 10,000 hours idea that if you practice something for that long, then you get to be an expert at it. But also, the people who achieve also spend like 10 years doing something, you know. Mm. And so I think that's where, if you don't necessarily become an expert, I'm the best, you know, in the top 10% of this type of thing. But if you stick out something, you get kind of like an expert hobbyist, Something. I feel like that's where I'm at. Like, I know I get paid to sing and play guitar, but I'm not a Steve Vai. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, that's someone who's put in the 40,000 hours, you know, and then just been so singularly focused that they've become just kind of this kind of whole other level that even people who are really good don't really understand.
Yeah, of course.
Like, you know. But then there's this kind of lower level, like, you do stick it out and you can be good enough to do it for a job. And a lot of people come up and they might say something along the lines to you as well, like, oh, you know, I wish I could play guitar, you know, and my response always is, no, you don't. Because I wish I could do something, right, actually suggests that I'm like, oh, I've got some mental or physical deficiency that I can't do it. If you really wanted to play, you would just learn how to do it.
Yeah. I get adults who say it's too late for me to learn how to play guitar, isn't it? It's like, it's not. But just the thing you've got against you is that you're an adult.
Yeah.
It's not that your brain is incapable of learning new stuff. It's that you are going to find it hard to find the time to put into it because you've got a job and you've got kids. And
adults hate sucking at stuff. It's like, I'm good at walking. I'm good at walking. I'm good at dressing myself. I'm good at the job that I do, or, you know, I'm at least capable enough at the job that I do to, you know, feel like I'm competent.
Yeah, I went out to play golf a few years ago and got really frustrated.
Yeah, because, hey, I'm good at all this other stuff. Why can't I just be as competent?
Stuff.
I can't be as competent at the thing I've just started.
Yeah.
You're not good at, as an adult, being a beginner because you're not a beginner anymore. When you're a kid, everything's like, I'm a beginner at everything. So I'm used to sucking at everything and kind of, you know. It's like that colouring. When colouring becomes, like, when you go from spilling outside the lines to, like, being able to actually colour a whole thing in the lines, and that you get that, oh, you've really turned the corner, you can keep in the lines, as if being, like, keeping in the lines is something you should aspire for, but for some reason it is. It's like, so that makes you good at colouring. My 3-year-old nephew colours stuff, and it's like, that looks amazing. Like, it doesn't look like it, you know. We think it should, because we think it should be in the lines, but just everything's everywhere. It looks way better than it would be if it was all neat and lovely. Something's going to happen to that poor kid, and he's going to be diverted to colouring the lines.
That's what happens, man. We spoke about it before.
And then he'll think that he's good at colouring, and I think he's already good at it.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you. We do, though. We indoctrinate our kids into patterns of behaviour.
Well, not us.
Hmm. Exactly. So I in my musical career, I kind of found myself at a bit of a crossroads where I'd decided after that first audition that I needed to get better.
If you wanted to do it, yeah.
So I spent 4 years getting better, but fuck all was happening for me. So I was in a half covers, half originals band. Which was the style at the time in Adelaide. Was that ever a thing here?
I feel like it's what I do now.
Okay, fair enough. Which is all kind of hard rock stuff. And I had hair, you know, halfway down my back. And the fact that I was singing all that stuff, that I've got a voice at all right now, is almost remarkable. But and I was in a Susie Quattro tribute band.
Who'd you play?
I played the other guitarist. So there was a lead guitarist and I played the other guy. I don't know how many guitarists. Susie Quattro only had one guitarist, which I think also goes to the heart of the fact that I think I was only in the band because the singer wanted to bone me. So
the Susie Quattro character. Yes. Yes. Was a woman.
Was a woman.
Yes.
Fuzzy Wuzzy was a woman.
I love that film. Oh, it's one of my favourite films ever.
So we, both those bands used to practice twice a week.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you get... You got a lot of practice.
Got a lot of
every
practice.
Every week.
Yeah. We practiced a lot more than we gigged.
So that's how bands are when you're younger.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Like, not anymore.
So I was at my parents having dinner one night and I got a phone call, and it was a guy I'd never met who, pretty well off the bat, said, I've asked around town about you. I've heard you can sing. We're going to China in a couple of months. Are you in? And I'd done maybe.
To sing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And play.
Wow.
Yes, not just Oh, did I? Yeah, okay.
No, no.
He was running a band.
I was being persnickety. Pernickety. Depending on if you want the English or American spelling.
But I was surprised when I found persnickety was a word.
Yeah, I was too. Because you had put it in my brain that it wasn't.
Good.
Is that a word? Well, it is now. Yeah. But I like my explanation of why it was a word.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
So I'd done very little live performance. I'd done maybe 50 gigs. And then found myself in China, in Shanghai, in a 4-month contract, learning to be a front man. And that first tour taught me most of what I know now about.
So that's
keeping my voice and trying to entertain a crowd from different backgrounds. Yeah.
So that's how 4 months. In Chinese. So 4 months in
Shanghai.
Doing how many nights a week?
6 or 7.
So
4 sets a night? Four or five sets a night? I can't remember. So maybe four.
So maybe 10 songs a set?
Yeah.
So maybe 40 songs a night.
That band, because we had a live keyboard player, there was a lot of just 40 minutes non-stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, so
and just calling way songs more as we go.
Yeah, right. So you really
I wasn't the only singer.
300,
but
playing 300 songs a week, effectively.
And needing to rehearse after the gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the venue was closed, yeah.
Yeah, to
learn new songs for tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like I say, including
that's grit, if you ask me.
Well, that's the thing. Like, yeah. that was just the determination to try and do a great job was what got me through that. And so I really feel that was the major foundation to me still having a career now. Because I still take those lessons I learned then, I take those into my gig life now,
yeah.
But you know, also with the booking agency that I run and you know, the music production I do for the theatre shows and stuff, so
awesome.
Yeah
it's
alright for someone who can't play a scale, so that's good.
Amazing.
Yeah lucky, really.
When the crowdfunding thing hit its target, you know, way earlier than you could have dreamed. So one of our mutual friends said, "You've worked really hard for this. You deserve it." And when you're in your own little kind of space, you don't think you deserve this. I mean, that's on the scale of what anyone else might think that success is. Like, that for me is ginormous. What has happened in the last couple of weeks? Other people might not think so, but I bloody well do. So, hooray for me. But when she said that, this kind of last 20 years literally went by my head. Like, this is going to be, not including the 2 Inside Zero CDs and the other things I played on, but this will be the 5th Dom Italiano release since my first one when I was 20. Now, it took 8 years for me to record, to get to the point, like, you know, like from my first guitar to me writing enough songs and then recording to release my first thing. And then for the last 20 years, like, it's taken 20 years to do another 5, not including the other things I've done in between. But you go, that really is sticking at something that you're passionate about for a really long time. And so when someone said, "You've worked really hard for this," because it's over such a long period of time and it's not been constant, I haven't really thought of it as something like that, you know, because you're not always writing songs and always recording songs, because you've got to have a job and, you know, have a life. But then when you do it, it just really hit me. I was like, yeah, I really, really have stuck at this for a long time. And it was quite eye-opening. It was good. It was like, I felt, oh, good. I can, you know, I'm not someone who just jumps around from thing to thing, you know. I do stick at stuff. So
I'm interested to read this. I'm interested about the idea that talent holds such little esteem in this guy's opinion.
Well,
and yours as well.
Yeah, well, this one's great because I think there's something that happens, like all of these books, and I've got quite a few of them as well. I've got another one called Peak, by Anders Ericsson, and he's kind of the main researcher who kicked off all this talent research, because he thought...
Is talent the same as aptitude?
I don't think so.
Okay.
One of the things... Because the talent's the idea that you're born with something. Like, oh, you've got a gift, you know. And it's this one, this book sort of talks about the fallacy of that, like, you know, then when you see someone on a stage, or you see, you know, Roger Federer, right, and you see that game and him playing, or even the first time he kind of broke onto the scene, like, you don't see the 10 years of hitting tennis balls.
No.
Like, you see, or you don't see all the 4 years that you know, practiced before, you know, someone called you up and said, come to China.
I practiced, like, really quietly because I didn't want anyone to hear me.
Yeah, I spent most of my...
My parents have heard me sing twice, I think. As far as live goes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's not a lot. But you don't live anywhere near it, you know.
It's not a lot. It's not a lot. Both times we're here.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
One time because I thought I was dying.
Pardon?
One time because I thought I was dying.
Is that when you had the... Was it...
Yeah, that one.
Ninja cockle?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the word was going to be.
Yeah. They just happened to come over and visit me because they thought I was going to be dead. But then I was at a gig. It was fine.
Which is why I'm so proud of you for actually taking this whole week off when you were sick. Because back then, when you were actually really close to potentially dying, you still went to work and went, fuck it, if I'm going to die, I might as well go do.
I don't know if that's what I said. I felt an obligation to be at that particular gig.
Because your parents were over?
No, different gig. Different gig. No, that was... anyway.
One thing that I have an issue with, and of course I totally understand it, is all of these books focus around how you know, for instance, what does it take to become the very best? And I feel like there's a huge and really concerning obsession in our Western society, like a elitism fetish, you know, all about, you know, how to be the best. And I personally don't give a fuck about being the best at anything other than me, which is good because I'm already the best at being me because no one else can be me. But it's that
everyone's a winner.
Well, no, but yes, but like, I'm completely against that thing of giving everyone a fucking certificate for, or a ribbon for being participating in a race or whatever. I'm not that, but I think there's this real obsession with, I mean, like, there's only one best footballer in the league this year, you know.
Who's that?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
Because it hasn't, but you, do you know what I mean? It's all about, who's going to win the thing? Who's going to win the thing? And I think because of, we've got these people who have spent so much of their life getting incredibly good at this, I do think it does have this residual effect of a lot of people don't try because they just think, well, I'll never be good enough. There's this idea that why bother?
Sure.
If I'll never be good enough to be the best. And I remember being a kid and hearing adults say about other musicians, he's so good, he just makes you want to give up.
Oh, yeah, that's always shit me.
Always bother me. I'm like, why? Just for me, it just makes me want to go home and fucking practice. Like, no one will ever be Steve Vai, Richard Cotton. You know, like, it's not the point. I want to just...
The cliche that there's always someone better and always someone worse than you is just such an easy, obvious leveler.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
just make you feel better about your place in the world, because it's just the truth of things.
Of course.
There's a lot of truth in those old cliches.
So what this book and a lot of other ones do is they focus around the idea of winners. You know, this caption here is that winners aren't born, they're made. And there's example here of Andre Agassi in his book, Open, saying his dad told him something along the lines of, if you hit 2,500 balls a day, you'll get 7,500 balls by the end of the week, and that's almost 1,000,000 a year. And if you hit 1,000,000 balls, if you're a kid that hits 1,000,000 balls a year, no one will be able to beat you because nobody else is doing that. Like, you literally have to go and do what no one else is doing in order to be the best. Now, that's if you want to be the best. My issue with... Now, I'm interested in all that stuff because it makes me think, well, how can I use my... talent that doesn't exist, but how can I refine the way I approach stuff so I can make the most out of the finite time that I've got to spend doing stuff? So that's why I'm interested in that. I like the idea that I can, if I was a teacher, I could walk into a classroom and say, right, everyone, this is our strategy, and by the end of the year we will all be able to play this on the guitar, right? Because we're not suggesting that you have to have some, like, you know, ethereal magic wand waved giving you an ability to do it. It's like, no, if we just put 20 minutes a day, blah 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 blah, you'll be able to do it. And I know that because that's how I'm okay enough to get paid to sing and play guitar, because of the constant time and effort and making sure I'm learning something instead of just practicing the same thing incorrectly all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I asked if talent was the same as aptitude is I think I've got a pretty decent set of ears. Like, I didn't study audio engineering, but I can hear sounds and hear how sounds sound good.
Yeah.
No one's taught me how to do that, and I guess there's a practice element to it. Of course, you get better at what you practice. So over the course of 20 years of doing it,
yeah,
I'm sure I produce better music now than I did 20 years ago. But there's got to be a baseline, doesn't there?
I don't know. In this book and in the Peak one, the one thing that the vital part of the puzzle that they talk about is opportunity. That's the thing. If you don't have opportunity, then you don't, like, if you don't have a university course to not go to sit in the car park and practice guitar, then, you know, then you don't have a space to practice and you can't get better at it. So if you had maybe not, let's say you'd not gone to China and you'd finished your commerce degree and you got a job, you know, a 50-hour-a-week job in that industry, then you wouldn't have had that time in China to have a lot of experience and then get a computer and then sit down and go, well, now I have to make these backing tracks, so I have to learn how to make these tracks sound good. You wouldn't, if you didn't have that opportunity, then you wouldn't have been able to learn the skills to improve the things that you could hear were needing improving. So no, I don't think it's the baseline as much as, because you got to remember that by the time you even started playing music, you'd heard music for 20 years. So it's like, someone asked me how long does it take you to write a song, and I said, well, however old I am at the day I finished writing that song, that's how long it took me to write that song. Like, it, I'm not trying to be
Ralph Waldo Emerson.
I'm not trying to be a jerk about it, but it's like, no. it's not like, oh, I'm sitting down to, you know, I've got 3 hours to write a song today. It's like, well, you know, you can't actually kind of disregard any of your other experiences.
No.
Like I said earlier about, you know, this song isn't about that girl, but it's my experience with that girl did inform me to be able to take that perspective in some way.
Yeah.
So I think it's an opportunity. This coffee table reminds me of a story about that.
Reminds me of Don Lane.
Coffee table? Why?
Really?
Yeah, I don't know.
Nice coffee table?
No.
Go on.
Don't know anything about
it. All right, it's okay.
Oh, there must be a story.
Yeah.
Ah.
It's quite well known in the industry.
Okay. That's why I don't know it. I'm not in the industry.
You can't defame the dead, can you?
Sure, why not? Go for it. I broke my leg when I was 2 years old, falling off a coffee table because I was singing and dancing. Like, I was probably singing Shakin' Stevens or something, like, you know, on a coffee table. So, you know, I didn't get a guitar till I was 12. I didn't start writing songs until I was maybe 15, right? But so I hadn't been, I wasn't a musician at all, but I clearly had been listening to music all my life, to the point of even going back, there's a story of me falling off a coffee table because I was singing. So that thing about, you know, do you have talent or is there something, a baseline? Well, it starts from as soon as you start experiencing. So if you never have an opportunity to hear music, then it's going to be really hard as a 50-year-old to, like, let's say you live in Kenya and you've never heard anyone play guitar, or you've never heard Western music. It's really going to be hard to pick it up at 50 and become an expert at it, because you just got no history with it. But I think,
I wrote a song when I was 9 years old about getting stuck in an outdoor toilet.
Do you remember what it was called?
It was called "I Want to Go Home."
Oh, wow.
I could sing it to you, but I'm not going to.
I thought you were going to have some, like, you know, crafty pun, play on words, like, you know, stuck in a dump or something like that.
No. Now, that's Dig of the Dump you're thinking of.
I love that show.
Never seen it.
Never seen it?
No.
Really?
So.
Yeah.
Let me, for the purpose of the grit conversation.
Yes.
Let me paraphrase her four main points.
Yes.
And then we should probably think about going away from this place and going to another place.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I don't know how long we've been here. I was going to set a timer today, but then I didn't.
I don't know either, but it's probably probably about an hour and a bit.
Oh, good. So, number one.
I got to leave here at 8 o'clock, which is in 18 minutes.
Develop a fascination.
Yes.
So, that means that even subconsciously, your mind is always working on heading towards your goal, whatever that is.
I want to be in a music video with 26 guitars like CC DeVille in Nothing But A Good Time.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
You're halfway there.
Yeah.
Whoa. Two.
Not Bon Jovi.
Aim to improve daily.
Why? Yeah. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
I'll try and take it on board.
Which always makes me think of that episode of The Simpsons where Bart has to lick envelopes, and the game is that he sees how many he can do in an hour and then to beat that number in the next hour. So to always try to improve each day on what it is that you're trying to do. Stop me if you don't think any of these are right, but this is
no, my paraphrase.
Number three.
Yes.
Remind yourself of the greater purpose. You can either be the bricklayer or the building maker.
Oh, wow.
Huh?
How's that?
How good's that?
Yeah.
Huh.
Well.
Number four.
Yeah. As a visual joke.
Adopt a growth mindset. And this is something I've tried to learn how to do. And in fact, I continue to try to learn how to do.
Yeah.
That you use the memory of a past good experience to go to the next good experience. I'm not very good. I said before, I'm naturally really shy. So I'm not very good at the cold call.
Oh, useless at it. Yeah, hate it. Yeah.
Invariably, when I do it, it's fine. It's not an arduous experience. It's nowhere near as bad as I build it up to be in my head. And I generally get a positive response from it.
Right.
And yet, the next time comes and I still find that,
you know,
really harrowing.
I actually do find it as bad as I think it's going to be when I'm doing it. I hate the cold call. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Is that because of the result you get from it?
Because
that's what I have to base it on. It has to be results based.
No,
also,
I just,
nobody died.
That's totally my absolute fear of rejection.
Well, yeah, I mean that's.
But like, it's so ingrained in my, like, I remember being on holiday before my sister was born, and they gave out, we were in Spain, and they gave out sweets, like those like Starburst lollies, I can't remember what they're called in the UK back then. And I had some, like I saved some, and there was a couple of kids, and there was one girl, and she was a pretty girl, right? But she said something along the lines of, oh, I forgot my lollies, and I said, well, I've got some, and she was really mean, right? She said something really, like, I wouldn't take those from you, not as in, like, I wouldn't deprive you of your lollies you saved. She was really nasty. And that, you know, I remember that. I can see her face.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
I can see her face. Slammed it into the dirt.
I'm talking like, you know, it's like 33, 34 years ago.
Yeah.
So even from all the way back then, just this total, like, all right, well, I just won't ask for stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, which is, go back, you know, to our conversation, you know, 2 weeks ago about why I had so much of an issue finding a way to talk about when I had, you know, when I was having trouble in my life, because I, every time in my brain every time I've reached out, like I got rejected, which is not true.
No.
I've just been rejected enough, probably not even as much as most people, but enough for me to be apprehensive of putting myself out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, our situation is always our situation. And I don't know if we touched on this when we had that conversation, just that, you know, there's no need to feel bad about the fact that you feel bad.
No.
Like, how you feel is how you feel. It doesn't matter you comparing yourself to the other person that's got it much worse than you.
True.
Yeah.
Mm.
So fuck them if they'd had more rejection than you.
Oh, well, okay.
And fuck her.
Yeah.
Who is she? Let's go and find her.
I don't remember her name. I don't know. She was just on the holiday,
too. You know her face, though, don't you?
Well, I knew her old face. Hey, old face. It's you again. Do you know the funny thing about... we're talking about with a view to improve.
A kill. Oh.
I remember trying to explain, because I...
I'm going to post a link to that, too.
Good one song. Of my...
Yes.
One of my really good friends, high school friend, Ivan, is an incredible guitar player and was when I first met him, like, you know, that... a few years ahead of me in purposeful practice. You know, probably, I think we've been playing guitar for about the same time, but had way more focus, and I think kept a teacher when I rejected one after I got slapped. So by the time he and I got together, he could play the scales. He was like, you know, this is the G scale, and if you play it from here, it's still here. And I'm like, oh, wow, that blew my mind. Changed my life. But... I remember thinking right back then that he just seems to be able to play stuff, right? And I have to work really, really hard at it. So for me, my analogy was, I'm like a snail climbing up a back step. But for me, I feel like I'm doing this, going up, 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 I'm getting nowhere, I'm getting nowhere, I'm getting nowhere, I'm getting nowhere, and then then I get onto the next step. Like, okay, well, I've, you know, and then... Then you keep practicing and you're like, all right, well, I can do a whole bunch of things this week that I couldn't do 2 weeks ago. Mm. You know, and then I get to this wall again of, I feel like I'm doing all this work. But I knew from the last step that if I just keep pushing through, I'll get to another step.
And meanwhile, stupid Ivan with his legs standing at the top waving at you.
I don't know. I was a slug and he was
a beautiful butterfly with legs.
Butterflies have legs.
Waving at you.
Yeah. Flapping his lovely moth wings at me. He's more mothy.
Is he?
Well, he's, you know.
Moth-eaten?
No, he's European, so he's hairy. So he's got...
That's good.
Yeah. But I remember that was like 15 years old going, you just got to put the time in. Because you're not good at this. This is not something you just kind of go, oh, look at me, I'm really good at playing guitar. It's like, actually, I'm really good at sitting around for hours on end learning how to play guitar. That's what I'm good at. So.
All right, then.
Grit and Bounce and Peak by Anders Ericsson, which I'll get you as well. I think that one's one I've given my dad.
Good. Thanks, man. Dom Slug Italiano. You can find him at behindthegreendoor@podcastduo.com. That's a shaking Steve.
Yeah, I leave my... My mum will tell you some funny stories about me singing and dancing as a kid, usually with my pants off.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And undies.
Great. Was that before you got those ginormous testicles you've got now?
No, apparently one of my mum's friends, when they were changing my nappy alongside some other kid, my mum's friend said, you shouldn't put a nappy on that, you should put those in a glass case. Yeah, even though I was a little baby, which is why clearly I'm covering up now, just for the benefit of people who might be, don't die, Matt. So thanks to everyone for listening and watching episode 10, possibly Matt's last ever performance of anything.
I'm back, it's okay. Dom@trcguo.com.
Matt@trcguo.com.
podcast@trcguo.com.
Send us suggestions of things, of books we've already read to talk about.
You can Instagram us, you can Facebook us, you can tweet us.
Oh.
You're always surprised.
Because I just don't do the tweet.
You've been tweeting.
Oh, accidentally, yes.
I meant the social media tweet. What are you talking about?
I did that twice during the episode. You didn't even notice.
You're an outrage.
See ya. Bye. Do you want to stick your arm in and say goodbye? Quick, producer. No, further in. Further in. Awesome. Well done, sick man.
I think it's gone well.
Oh, that was only an hour and 20.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah, timer next time.
Yes. Oh, half as long. Split that into two episodes.
Do you want me to?
Yes.
Really?